Hello, this is Rachel Lynn, and you are listening to Upstage Left. In this episode, I speak with playwright Will Arbery, whose play Heroes of the Fourth Turning is currently playing at Playwrights Horizons. You may have also caught his play Plano earlier this year, which was produced by Club Thumb. Oh man, I love this episode. I first met Will in 2016, and we talk about that a little bit in this episode, but it's been so incredible to see his journey because, as you'll see from this interview, he is someone who is so thoughtful and really cares about every character he writes. So if you have a chance, go to Playwrights Horizons and catch Heroes of the Fourth Turning before it closes on October 27th. Here is Will Arbery.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Great. So, you have a show going on right now at Playwrights Horizons called Heroes of the Fourth Turning.
Yes, I do.
Yes. Do you want to give a very brief summary?
Sure.
For people who may not have seen it or may not see it, or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, sure. Heroes of the Fourth Turning is a play that takes place on a night in Wyoming, in the middle of Wyoming, in late August 2017, a week after the Charlottesville riots, the day after Bannon has resigned from Trump's cabinet, and 2 days before the solar eclipse. And it's about a small gathering of young religious Catholic conservatives who have gathered to toast their mentor, Gina, who's just inaugurated the first female president of a tiny school where they all went. Well, not all of them, but for blurb purposes, it's easier to say that they all went there. But so they're waiting for Gina to come to this little after party, and it takes place in real time, and they're just talking and getting tipsy and debating, and it gets intense.
And when I asked you how it was going, you said you're like feeling feelings you've never felt before.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Like what's sure, yeah. I'll try. I'm still trying to put words to it, but it's such an intense play to bring into the world. You know, like I grew up in that world. I grew up in a super conservative, Catholic, intellectual, passionate, poetic world where these ideas were not just things that went unconsidered. You know, they were deeply, deeply considered and thought through and reasoned out. And so you know, just the act of writing this play required me to do the same thing. You know, like I had sort of drifted from that world. You know, not just sort of. I had really drifted from that world and uncoiled myself from that world, and the act of making this play has been an exercise in reapproaching it with like a lot of like grace and clarity and compassion and respect. And so bringing that into a New York off-Broadway house has just been, I mean, you can just feel it in the air. It's just not something that happens very often, you know, sitting in a space where these ideas go unchallenged, basically. And, you know, some of the ideas in the play get challenged, and some of, you know, there's internal debate because part of the point of the play is to show that there's not like a conservative monolith. You know, it's complicated. But, just like being in a room like that and being like responsible for it is just, it's like, I don't know, something happens to my body. I just feel very, like, physically entwined with this play and people's experience of it. And so, which is sort of, like, always the case with playwriting, but this one in particular, I don't know. Like, I just, I'm, like, freaking out. Yeah. And, you know, it's been going really well. I mean, this makes it sound like I'm, like, you know, need to be hospitalized, but no. But like it's been going really well, and like people are responding, you know, they're rising to the challenge of this play, and you know, they're feeling challenged but also sort of invigorated, I think, and that's great. And you know, right now I'm just on the precipice of like wondering like whether, you know, conservative publications will come see it and engage with it and like attract their readership and their audience. So like wondering if those houses in the later part of the run will be filled with more of a mix of you know, mix of ideologies, like if people, because right now the audiences have been pretty mostly like standard liberal
right.
Theater.
People who go to off-Broadway shows.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think it would be so electrifying to have those audiences be more mixed, basically. We'll see if it happens. It might not happen, but if it does, man, that'll be interesting.
Have you had any conservative folks come to see that, like, that you know of?
Like a very small handful, like a couple people I know from like Texas, you know?
Yeah.
But even there, it's like they live in New York. Like it's not quite the same, you know, because so much of the play takes place in Wyoming, and there is one character who's from New York, but a lot of them have a sort of more skeptical view of like cities in general. You know, there's one character who's like, stay away from New York, you know, like get away from urban temptations. And how do I get people who believe that to see this play? It might not happen on this run. Like maybe it'll be
in a regional production.
Yeah. Like if that happens, like that could be really interesting. But, I've had some like people who are more religious come to see it. Like, you know, like a priest, a couple of people have reached out to me who like have backgrounds in theology. So that's been interesting, but I don't think any of them would identify as like conservative, you know, so we'll see.
And you said and your parents are coming to see it.
Yeah.
Is that exciting or is that does that make you nervous or does that?
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting. It makes me so nervous. Like, I just think it's going to be an interesting experience for them. Yeah, like physically just being surrounded by people who are, who think so differently than they do and who are, like, beholding their work on stage. I mean, because the play takes place at a school that's based on the school where they teach. And I'm trying to, you know, part of the provocation of the play is that I'm treating their work really seriously and I'm taking it really seriously and on its own terms. And they've read the play, which helps a lot.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And they actually like gave me some helpful, like, you know, this could be more accurate or like they should reference this philosopher at this point, you know. And so that actually it made the play better. So they're prepared. I just like what I think they is impossible to prepare them for is just like the physical experience of watching that play and being surrounded by all those people while watching it. I think it'll be, you know, I think it'll be really good for us. I think it'll be like, I think it'll be a big stepping stone to like having the kind of relationship that I would love to have with them of being like, you know, this is who I am and this is my work. And, And yeah, we might disagree on some things, but I will never dismiss you or abandon you. I will always like, for me, love is like really scary and messy and like hard work, and I will always try to be doing that work, you know.
Yeah.
What
is there? What is your family's relationship to your? I mean, this is your. You told me that this is the first time your parents are seeing your work on stage,
uh-huh.
like your plays. What is their relationship to your job, your occupation?
Yeah, I mean, I think they worry about me in the way parents worry about their kids. You know, like they, you know, they worry about me paying rent and all of that. But they do have a real understanding that it's my like vocation. Like
yeah.
that's something that they have modeled for me in a lot of ways. Like they, you know, they have never pursued. You know, like money. They've always just done what they believe in, which is teach at tiny, you know, tiny colleges where it's like these great books program, and they are so passionate about every lecture that they give and every conference that they go to, and you know, they had 8 kids and they did that for God and because they believe so strongly in like staying open to childbirth and like all, like they're so deeply and personally and like beautifully immersed in like their faith and their work, and that was like an amazing model for me, you know, mm-hmm. like to follow your passion like as they did. So they have my support in that way. And then I think that there's like a little bit of like a prodigal son thing going on where they like, you know, it's been for like all of my 20s, it was like a little bit of like a don't ask, don't tell situation. Like they knew that I was writing a lot. They knew that I was making progress and making headway in the, you know, industry, and that it was really difficult for me at times, and they were proud of me, but like, we didn't really get into the specifics.
right,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, theater is such a... there are so many nuances to, like, working in the theater. I feel like a lot of people don't understand from
yeah.
the outside.
yeah, totally. Yeah. I think it was, you know, they're incredibly brilliant people, and, like, their voices are, like, always in my... head. So I think it was good to have some space to like write my plays without you know, without worrying too much about what they would think of them. But now I'm finally ready to be like, okay, here's one that I really want to know what you think.
That's
yeah.
exciting.
Yeah.
So how did you come to playwriting? Like, when did you start writing plays?
I think the first play I wrote was a short play when I was a junior in high school, but I didn't know that I wanted to be a playwright until like I was a senior in college. But I'd been writing a lot since I was 10. I'd been thinking of myself as a writer, and reading a lot of like poetry and all that. And then, yeah, I went to Kenyon College knowing that I wanted to write creatively, and that I wanted to act and keep doing theater, and that I wanted to direct and just do all of it. And I had like an insatiable desire to just make things.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until senior year that it felt like all of those things clicked into playwriting. And it didn't even really feel like playwriting to me. It felt like play making, you know.
Mm.
The act of making a play was what I got really hooked on.
Did you grow up mostly in Wyoming or mostly in Texas?
Mostly in Texas. Yeah.
And did you see a lot of theater out there?
I saw, yeah. There was actually a brief period of time where my dad was like a film and theater critic for a local paper. So he was like seeing a lot of plays during that time, and I would go with him, and that sort of sparked, like an initial like, whoa, cool, you know, wow, Tom Stoppard, whoa. Yeah, and I was also like acting in a lot of plays in high school too. So yeah.
What in college made you feel like, oh yeah, this is the path, like I should be a playwright? Or was there a moment where you felt like this is the way?
Yeah, I mean, I just remember like, yeah, just the act of playwriting. I mean, I took two classes over the course of 2 years taught by the playwright Wendy McLeod, who runs the theater department there, or like, yeah, has been a staple of that theater department for a long time, and she was incredibly encouraging, and I just felt so good when I, not even when I wrote them, the writing was fun, but like hearing them out loud was what really became addictive to me. And when I was a senior, I put on an evening of 7 of my own one acts, and I directed all of them and cast them with like my favorite actors at the school, and just did it, and like, you know, and made a big like event out of it. And you know, they were like weird, all of them were so different and weird and personal, and that like taking the initiative and just doing that and having that experience before I left school was what I think was really valuable, because I also remember I was like super super depressed about like some personal stuff that was going on at that time, and like really experiencing like a level of psychological distress that I had never experienced before. And the act of like making these plays, making this evening of plays, was like really like salvific in a way. It like just it gave me purpose, and I just felt like, okay, this feels like my thing. This feels like where it all converges for me. All of my energy can go into this. Yeah.
Also, I have to say, they're like, weirdly, your group of friends from Kenyon is like a magical group of people. I just feel like I know you through Lydian Blossom, who's a brilliant actress, who is, you know, like you have a group of a group of theater friends who are still making work in New York, and
But Lydian didn't go to Kenyon, actually.
I know, she went to Sarah Lawrence.
Yeah, but it's true. Yeah, Will Dagger, Drew Lewis, Rachel Sacknoff. You know, Knute Adams went to Kenyon, Gracie Gardner. There's now like Emma Miller and Julia Greer are making amazing work, and Harrison Rivers went to Kenyon. Yeah, there was definitely Kenyon. Something in the water. Yeah.
Ohio, that's where to be. You can get inspired.
Yeah. Seriously.
I don't know if that's a compliment to Ohio or a...
Totally. Man, yeah. At least Gambier, Ohio. Ugh, love it.
And then after that, you're just like, I'm moving to New York.
Mm-hmm.
You just came here.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't know that I was going to do that, actually. Like, I got really lucky. So there was, like, an independent movie that filmed on Kenyon's campus right as I was graduating, a movie called Liberal Arts, directed by Josh Radner, from How I Met Your Mother. And he was a Kenyon alum. And, like, Elizabeth Olsen was in it, and Allison Janney, and Richard Jenkins, and Zac Efron, and, like, all these, like, like movie stars were, like, suddenly on campus. And I got a job as extras casting director. So I actually, like, didn't leave after graduation. I stayed on campus and just worked on that movie and had, like, a real job on that movie and got paid a real salary during that like month and a half, and that gave me enough money to move to New York. But even then, I was so lost, and like I had no like no connections in New York, no understanding of like the contemporary theatrical landscape at all. So I just went back to Dallas initially, and I went back to Dallas, and I like got like I was like living at home, and like I got a job like selling, like, you know, like one of those weird stands within a grocery store where it's like an outside company has a stand in a grocery store and they're like selling things.
Yeah.
So I got like trained to sell those things and like went through this horrible corporate training where you were going to get like paid on commission. So it wasn't even like, you know, it was like a horrible pyramid scheme. And I like was commuting out to like some weird place in the suburbs to like learn how to do this thing. And I was so depressed and so just like ready to be miserable about the future. And my sister Lucia was just like, you just made all this money working on that movie. Like, you have enough to buy a plane ticket. Like, go to New York. Like, do it now. Like, go upstairs and buy a ticket. And she like made me go upstairs and buy a ticket. And I like texted my friends Matt and Justin, who were like planning on moving there, and I was like, I wanna do this. I wanna live with you guys. Like, let's do this. And they were like, okay. And so, yeah, I did it, and it just took the leap. It was very scary.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that story.
Yeah.
So you're not, do you feel like, I mean, actually, do you feel like you're someone who doesn't necessarily plan too far? Are you, like, someone who just goes with your intuition? Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I was better at planning, but I really do just, for better or for worse, I just follow my intuition and do what I try to do what I love. Yeah. So I never had a full-time job that, you know, I would temp, I would, you know, do just weird gigs. I worked at a restaurant bar for a while.
That's after you got to New York.
Yeah. It's like insane that I survived. I don't even, like, my parents didn't really have the ability to help me out. I mean, they were following their passion of teaching at these tiny schools, and, you know, they had, you know, seven other kids, because I have seven sisters. And they were, like, starting all their families and all of that, and so, like, you know, my parents want to help, but they're stretched very thin. And anyway, all that to say, I was very much on my own, tutoring, yeah, working at weird offices, temping, like, did PA work. I did, like, weird online work. Whew. Thinking back on it now, like, I mean, it still feels that way. Like, there's been plenty of months, even this year, where it's like, I don't know how I'm going to pay rent in 2 days, you know, and just trying to scramble to make that work. But I'm glad I did it the way I did it. I'm glad I didn't get locked into
a day job. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Day jobs can really, like, suck you in.
Yeah.
I feel like they can, like, mess with your priorities, you know, lose sight of what's actually important, because that's speaking as somebody who has had a day job for 5 years that I just left.
Congrats.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
It's terrifying.
Yes, it is.
Great.
So terrifying.
yeah. When was that you moved to New York?
That was in 2011.
And then you went to grad school for a few years.
Yeah, I went to grad school at Northwestern for a couple of years. So I did 2 years in New York, suffered, but made a lot of work. And really the making. Like, I didn't know anything about how to be a writer. I didn't know anything about how to get an agent or how to, like, send plays to theaters or any of that, like, networking stuff. So those 2 years were really focused on making, and I think that was really valuable because it taught me so much about my voice. Then I went to grad school at Northwestern for 2 years, and that was great. I'm in a lot of debt, but it was great. Yeah.
Did you thrive in that environment?
Yeah. I mean, I was so hungry, and so I had, you know, been through the gauntlet of New York, you know, like being a nobody in New York a little bit, that I went to Northwestern just really determined to get as much out of it as I could and to write as much as I could and to use their film equipment. And I made like 4 short films when I was there. And yeah, and just kind of had my eye on New York the whole time I was there. I really missed New York while I was there, which was a good sign. Mm. I didn't know if I would, but I really did. And so by the time I left, I had written some, you know, I had written some stuff, you know, I had written a few full-length plays and a feature screenplay and a pilot, and like all of those things have really, you know, come in handy when it comes to like make an actual living in this industry. Mm. So yeah, I definitely, it was also just so much fun, like the friends I made there, and it was just a really, really wonderful time. Yeah.
This isn't really a question, but I'm thinking about like, so we met doing serials, is
mm-hmm.
that right?
Mm-hmm.
Will wrote 12 episodes for this late night theater festival. So 12 episodes, each one is 10 minutes, and that was called Screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was these, like, there were, I feel like when I think about your short plays, I love them, and I feel like they're off, to me, they're often, like, really zany and playful, and there's, like, a real childlike quality in a lot of them. And I'm also thinking of The Alignment System,
mm-hmm.
and the one with Jack Plow where there's a little sister.
Yeah, Landline.
Landline.
Yeah, you were so good in that.
I love that one. I feel like those plays, I feel like, really speak to your work in a way that, I mean, they're in your full lengths as well, but there's like a real feeling of like nostalgia in those plays, or like craving to move back to like a simpler time or more.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that in your, like, that's something that feels, I don't know, like a part of your work?
Interesting. Yeah, I totally see what you're saying. I think that, like, so often when I'm writing, I'm trying to capture a feeling. And often that feeling, like almost always that feeling, was a feeling from the past. Mm-hmm. So that might be where that nostalgia feeling is creeping in. Yeah, longing for a simpler time, totally. I don't know if there ever was a simpler time for me, but I do long for it. Yeah, yeah. I love simplicity. All I ever want is to be simple. And it feels like, it feels like that's what I'm striving for, is like a simplicity or a clarity or just being. I'm just striving for like a space where we can just be together, and all of that noise in my head, and there's a lot of it, is like what I'm working through. Like, that's like the journey.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you also wrote, I printed it out, but you wrote like that short play, a secret short play for us too, to close out. So Will and I worked at the Flea Theater, which is a theater downtown, and they had a space on 41 White Street, and they closed that theater after decades.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the last show in that space ever, and Will wrote a secret play about it, and the last few lines of that play are just, I've spent so much time in this room.
Mm.
And we just hear that like 5 times. And I feel like that is the most simple and pure way to say goodbye to a space. It's
mm-hmm.
just saying like, I've spent so much time here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was the day after Trump got elected. Yeah.
That's right.
It was crazy. The
oh
energy in that
God.
Room was so intense. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's right. Because
yeah.
you also wrote it that day. You wrote it.
Yeah, I wrote it the next day, I believe. Or maybe it wasn't the day after, but
It was that week.
It was certainly that. Yeah, it was like, I definitely remember writing that. And it was so much not, it wasn't just about saying goodbye to that space. It was like saying goodbye to Obama.
Yeah, a different era.
Yeah, and like, and yeah. So it ended up being about both in this way. Or that was the responsibility that I felt, was to make it about both. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also listened to that interview you did on Playwrights Horizons, the one, the video one.
Oh gosh, I haven't watched it. I'm like so, ugh, gosh.
We can watch it together sometime. You don't want to hear what you,
oh gosh.
Well, you say something like ideas are dangerous mm-hmm. in that. And I can see that in your work. You're playing with, like, there's so much philosophy and ideology in your work. But also tenderness, like you treat everyone seems to be like struggling against their own beliefs. Mm-hmm. And it really like drives the action in your plays more than, how have you experienced that idea of ideas being dangerous in your own life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think linking that with tenderness is really smart because for me, so much of my, yeah, path in terms of like wrestling with my own identity as a, you know, as a straight white man who comes from like a very conservative background has been about like wrestling with the ideas that I was asked to inherit, or just the ideas that I was constantly exposed to as a child, as a teenager, as, you know, still to this day, like these people that I love so much and have so much tenderness for. That they can also have ideas that these other people that I love and have so much tenderness for find abhorrent. And like just that feeling, that destabilization, feeling pulled in those directions is something that I'm very used to. It's like a discomfort that has just become the air that I breathe. And so a lot of my work has started to become about capturing that destabilization, like not shying away from the force of the ideas, not only what's beautiful about them, but also what's scary about them, not only on the right, but also on the left. And really just letting those ideas be full and informed and, yeah, scary and dangerous. And also letting the people be complicated and beautiful and full of love and full of hope and despair and, like, all the things. And letting that love be really real and really dangerous, because love is also so dangerous and so destabilizing. I don't know, you know, within that is the hope that like that we can meet each other, like in that space, in that, like, if we acknowledge that it's dangerous and still do it, like if we acknowledge that listening to each other and spending time with each other and loving each other is dangerous and still do it, then I think we'll all come out better on the other side.
That's beautiful. So outside of your own work, even though, you know, we could talk about your work forever, like, what do you love about what do you love seeing on stage? What's your favorite thing?
Whoa, good question. gosh, I love moments that just feel completely unplanned. I love feeling like I love cracks in the veneer, you know. Like I love feeling like a laugh that an actor had was real, or you know, like I love when it doesn't feel like a play. I love when I love when it's like perfectly messy, you know, like and just so alive. I just love when things feel alive, and I love when things feel like they have an understanding of their own relationship to breath, you know, and that I love plays that teach you how to breathe, because I think listening is breathing, and if a play understands its own relationship to breath, then it will teach the audience that relationship, and we can all truly be in the same room together. And I think, yeah, what I'm after is like something like that. And I love plays that end with mystery. You know, I don't like being handed a moral. I think that's a recipe for forgetting. If you feel like you know exactly what a play is saying by the end. And I would argue, even if you know exactly what question it's asking, that's a recipe for forgetting it. And I don't want people to forget my place. I love being scared. You know, there's a line in my play, like, I love pain. We love it. Like, I just think the body, I love plays that really have like an intense relationship to the body. Yeah.
As your plays have gotten like produced by bigger and bigger spaces, how has that affected the space that's allowed for messy and for the cracks?
Mm-hmm.
When I think of plays that are produced at play, like it's very rarely at an off-Broadway space do I ever see anything that's like actually, like it's sometimes feels so polished, you know.
I mean, I think a lot of that is probably just in the writing. Like I think of it as like as invitations. Like you create this document, this text that, you know, yeah. You want all the actors to be saying these words. You want it to move in this way and feel a certain way. Like there are certain things that feel like non-negotiable, but then you build in invitations for the performer to crawl inside, the director, the designer, to fill that space. Like they are invited to fill that space with something that only they can fill it with, you know? And I think that's where it comes in. Like that push-pull between what is inevitable about the play, what is fixed about the play, and like their own beating weird hearts. Like that's where that, it's like a precise messiness, or like in Plano we called it like a clear confusion. Like, yeah, we're confused as hell, but like we really know what we're confused about. And we feel the performers like right there with us, you know. I don't know, it's just an aliveness. I don't know, it's instinct also. Like I feel like it's just what I like, it's just my taste, and so I always try to achieve it. And like you just do that piece by piece and try to strip away the stuff that feels like bullshit. And it's hard. Like, so much of it is bullshit.
That's so true about life, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So, last question. What is your hope for the form of theater? Like what is your hope for the American theater?
Yeah. Wow. question. Me? What's my hope? Oh, man. Well, what I'll say is, like, I'm really excited about the moment that we're in. I'm really excited about so much of the work that's happening. What I'll say is that I feel not enough white artists wrestling with what it means to be white in America and the legacy of whiteness and the implications of whiteness. I'm really excited to see more work that does, by white artists that exposes itself and digs deep and gets scary and vulnerable. I just think artists of color have been doing that for so long, not just about their own experiences, but also about whiteness. And it's far past time to do more of that work. And even just to use that word, I think, whiteness. Like, it makes white people so uncomfortable. Conservative, liberal, I see it happen. Mm. You know, when I take meetings in LA, there's like almost sometimes like a feeling of like, whoa, what are you talking about? Like, like what? No, that sounds wrong. You know, like, but I think it's really necessary. And I think, I just genuinely believe that we need to be really honest with ourselves and finding ways to expose white supremacy in all of its forms. So I hope that that happens. And I also, my other hope is that I would love to create a theater culture that encourages really hard conversations rather than, you know, institutions or sometimes artists trying to, you know, provide like solutions or answers or like signal their own, you know, political virtue, I guess. Like, I notice a lot of plays these days, like, making it very clear where they stand on certain issues. And I think, like, in some cases that's good, but I think that theater can be a space for, it might be one of the only spaces we have left for, like, the really hard work of investigation and questioning. And I don't want artists or theaters to be afraid to produce work that doesn't provide easy answers, you know, or like wrap itself up nicely in a little message, you know.
Yeah. I think part of that is also like training audiences to not like seek answers. So sometimes we'll leave the theater and they're like, oh, like, I don't know. I feel like we're trained to think when people leave the theater and they're like, I have no idea what that play was about. Mm-hmm. Or like, what was, like, mm-hmm. we as a culture take it as a negative?
Yeah. There's a lot of like, well, what was it saying at the end? And I just find that so interesting. Because to my mind, that's not the point of art at all. You know, that if I wanted to write an essay, I would have written an essay. This is a play. You know, this is like, these are bodies in space and time. Like, this is not about saying something definitive. This is about you spending time in this room with these people. Yeah. That's a real problem, I think, is that people want to know exactly what it's saying. But again, I just feel like that's a recipe for forgetting, and we shouldn't be forgetting plays, you know? I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you. This was fun.